Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The presenting sponsor for today's episode of the Buffalo Beat is Visa, a network working for everyone. All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Buffalo Beat. This one is happening on Monday, October 11th at, if you're on Eastern time, 4:12 a.m., just to let you know where we're at right now. The Bills one-upping the Chiefs, 38-20. That's the major story. We'll get into that. But right now, just to let you know, it's going to be a little loopy because we're on a low amount of sleep. It's a different time zone. Had a lightning delay. There was a lot of stuff going on tonight.
A lot of moving parts.
So
I'm going to yawn like 17 times during this podcast.
Well, that's normal for you.
Yeah, that's true. I would yawn at 5 p.m.
So welcome into the Buffalo Beat, everyone. My name's Joe Biscaglia, and the other voice you heard is Matt Bove, the sports director at WKBW in Buffalo, Channel 7. And we are here to go over the Bills' 38-20 win over the Chiefs, a momentous occasion, even if the team themselves refused to allow it to that to even enter their brain. But I do want to think a small part of their brain thinks to themselves, man, they just beat the Chiefs, especially because the Chiefs are the ones that blew their doors off twice last year. They were the measuring stick heading into the season. It was the team that repeatedly in the offseason, when it was brought up, when it was when Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs were brought up, Bean's automatic response was always, you know, you look what Tampa Bay did to them to put Patrick Mahomes at bay, and that's something that we need to do better on. And what did they do? Lo and behold, they spent three premium resources on players to help their pass rush with this specific matchup in mind. They have said longstandingly that the Chiefs are the gold standard. So we're just going to sit here and believe that this win meant nothing? No, absolutely not. So we'll get into all the weeds of it, but the Bills win 38-20. Matt Bove, what were your initial takeaways from this game? Whether it be, broad-based or in the weeds, your call.
I don't know if this is me having a little bit of recency bias, but I might go as far as saying that this is the most impressive regular season win of the Sean McDermott era. Is that crazy?
No, it's not, because of what it represents. And I'll let you go forward with what you wanted to say, but I would put the Cowboys win up there.
Yeah, that was a big one.
And I actually thought there was like a moment of similarity between the two, but I think I'm with you. I mean, especially for what they're trying to do, this was huge.
I think the Cowboys game was the Bills have arrived as a contending team in the NFL. I think tonight, yesterday, whenever this game even ended, was the Bills have arrived as the team in the NFL. I think the Bills are now the team to beat in the AFC. I think we would have been talking about that last week, but we would have said, well, how are they going to do against the Chiefs? And they went into Arrowhead, and they punched Kansas City in the mouth on both sides of the ball. The Bills moved down the field with big chunk plays. Josh Allen had an MVP caliber game. And on defense, four turnovers? Mm-hmm. What? Like, that's insane. And we said, we were sitting there doing the podcast last week. We said, we don't even know if the Bills' defense is that good because they haven't had any real true tests yet. And then I said last week, that if the Bills held Kansas City to 30 points or fewer, it would be more impressive than shutting out either the Dolphins or the Texans. And they didn't hold Kansas City to 30 or fewer. They held them to 20. It was a damn impressive performance.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I mean, there's not really much else you can say, but because they knocked it out of the park from every single way that you look at it. And I mean, you talk about holding the Chiefs 20 points. The Steelers scored more than the Chiefs on the Bills. Just to put that in perspective. But yes, this, going to your point, and the way that I termed this in my post-game observations over at The Athletic, is that it wasn't an arrival. It was a graduation for the Bills.
That.
Because when you look at what has been missing from them, it's being able to go toe-to-toe with the elite of the elite. And the Chiefs are, they're going through some stuff right now. Like, their defense is in a rough spot. And they were missing two of their starting defenders in Chris Jones and Charvarius Ward, who probably would have made an impact. But still, even if they had those guys in there, I think a lot of the story would have remained the same. So this was a graduation, not only in the fact that they beat the Chiefs, but it's a graduation in the fact that they are now totally removed from this plucky underdog syndrome that they had for years on end. And now it's you're the team. You are the team that has to live up to it. You are the team that is now going to be hunted by everyone else, because this is a statement win. No matter how much they don't want it to be that, this is a statement win that will go on across the rest of the AFC. And so now when you play these other teams, it's going to be a momentous occasion for all of them. I mean, it was before, but now that you just went in and smoked the Chiefs the way that you did at Arrowhead and limited Patrick Mahomes in a way that, you know, not a lot of people have, especially, you know, getting him to turn the ball over a couple of times. It was just a full phase effort. And so for them to do that is mightily impressive. And it completely encompasses what they needed to do to move forward. Like, this is now, this is a watershed victory. When you look at what it means, what it represents, and now the expectations that come along with it. Like, this is a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Like, we all had the preseason notions and before everything got started. But this is now a team that is performing at a high level. They are dominating opponents. This is four straight blowouts now. Four straight. And they should have won their first game against the Steelers. They blew that one. So when you have all of this going for you, you are a legitimate contender. And really, the teams besides the Chiefs that I think that would match up well with the Bills, the Chiefs, the Buccaneers, and the Chargers.
I was going to say the Chargers.
And that's it. That's it to me. I mean, some might say the Cardinals, but I don't see it as much. But yeah, this is that contender moment. And they even said at the end of the game, like, you guys are going to make a lot of it. Well, you're damn right. 100%. I mean, you just got crushed a couple times by the Chiefs last year, and now this is their moment.
And here's my issue. I understand the not making more out of a week five thing. I totally understand that, and they're saying all the right things, and I understand why. But this is why it means more than that. Because all summer, we heard Brandon say, we heard players say that the bar is Kansas City and that they want the AFC Championship to go through Buffalo. And now, Kansas City has three losses, so the Bills are two games ahead of Kansas City with the tiebreaker. The Bills are essentially now three games ahead of Kansas City. And in their division, with the way they are playing, I do not see the Kansas City Chiefs winning their next, you know, the, what is it, 14 games. Like, that, I don't think that's going to happen. So the Bills are sitting in a really great spot, and they're in the driver's seat. And if you now have a better record than Kansas City and have to meet again in the playoffs, it's going to be in Orchard Park. And that's what they've wanted. And it's funny because one of the things you said was about, you know, it being a watershed victory for the Bills. And I've said a lot of times these last couple weeks, things change when you go from being the hunter to the hunted. And today the Bills went to Kansas City and proved that they can do it on either side. They can win in that role.
You can tell it's 4:20 in the morning because you said, what are they going to win their next 14?
What is
it's a 17 game season. Like,
oh, they've that, played five games. Yeah.
It's loopy. That's what I meant.
Yeah,
that's
literally looked at two wins and I was like, okay, four. Yeah. I didn't even think. Yep. 14.
No.
Math.
It's 4:20 in the morning. I mean, Eastern time. 3:20 here. So, hey, we got an hour reprieve. But we're working on minimal sleep, getting close to 24 hours being awake.
Like,
but
literally 24 hours ago, I was snap hooking drives into we've been up for that long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a thing. So, yeah, not 14, but yeah. They
you know, they're not going to run the table. That's what I'm saying. Let me live.
They would have to get to 14 wins, I think you were trying to go.
Yeah,
for.
That's,
yeah.
Yes, okay.
I'm with you. I just had to.
Yeah, I don't see Kansas City finishing this season the way they're playing 14-3. And as crazy as it sounds, I can't even believe I'm saying this, that would mean the Bills would need to lose three more games for Kansas City to be ahead of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Bills are probably going to lose a fluky game here, like the Steelers game. It's going to happen. It happens basically to every single team. But I don't know. I mean, they're going to be favored in every game they play from here on out except the Bucs, and they might now be favored in the Bucs game.
Yeah.
That's going to be how it is.
I'm not – yeah, that's way down the line. I mean
– yeah, there's a lot that can happen.
There is one thing I will agree with the overall sentiment from the Bills team and how they spoke after the fact is that it is week five.
Yeah.
And that there's a lot of crazy stuff that can happen, whether it be injury. Like, if Josh Allen gets hurt next week
– oh, then you're all – exactly.
Then you're looking at a wild card team at – what they would hope at best.
Don't sleep on the MVP.
Just
don't sleep on the MVP.
I'm sleeping on him. I would like to sleep as well.
Yes.
But that, from that perspective, I get it. But it's also okay to, like, maybe not publicly, because then
yeah, no, 100%.
But in private, to acknowledge from where they came from to where they are now, it's such a humongous thing for this organization. And I know that's what they probably said behind closed doors was a lot different. And, you know, to their credit, they held a straight face the entire week. But yeah, this Chiefs game was something. But go ahead, sorry.
And what I was going to say is, if they do play again in the playoffs and the Chiefs win, then this game really doesn't mean anything anymore. Yeah. But it does prove to us and to everybody else that they can beat this team and they can beat anybody.
Yeah, this was the first time in a long time that the Chiefs have lost two straight games at Arrowhead.
That's nuts.
Because their last game at Arrowhead, they lost to the Chargers. Yeah, and there was also an era of the Bills were getting the Chiefs at the perfect time because even if they were to get some guys back from injury, it usually takes injury guys at least a week of acclimation or at least one game of acclimation to get back into the flow of things. They got Frank Clark back. They got Willie Gay, who was their best defensive end and best linebacker. They did not have Charvarius Ward. They did not have Chris Jones. So when you have those things happening and then your top cornerback is Mike Hughes, and you're also trotting out Rashad Fenton and Legarius Sneed. Like, there's going to be opportunities there for the opposing team. So let's get into Josh Allen.
Sure.
Because this was another one of those games for him. Like, one of those games that you remember from a regular season perspective. Because a lot of them kind of blur together after a while. But there's always those select few where you're like, yep, remember that one, clear as day. This is how he looked. This is what happened and everything like that. And so this was one of those moments. And he's we use the term arrive a lot, and I think to a certain degree it was an arrival, but it was the final arrival for Josh Allen. This was the last thing outside of winning the Super Bowl that he had to check off, beating the Chiefs, beating a legitimate Super Bowl team in their barn, being able to do all of that. That was the last thing he needed to do to, you know, I guess, coronate himself as a legitimate franchise superstar quarterback in the NFL. I mean, he's there and he dominated this game. He, every single chance that the Chiefs gave him, he was constantly looking past the second level of the defense. He knew there would be opportunities deep down the field. He wasn't shying away from them. He was accurate whenever he took those shots. And if it wasn't there, he wasn't force feeding it. So just a full mark performance by Josh Allen. And one of those ones that I think people are going to remember for a long time, including that one that we were talking about, the Dallas game. Yep. And I wanted to, you know, I'll get into a play that kind of I thought of with those two combined. But what did you make of Josh?
I think tomorrow or whenever the newest odds come out that Josh Allen will now be the favorite to be the NFL MVP.
Really?
This season. Yeah. Well, he was already the second favorite. He was already he already had the second best odds behind Kyler Murray. And after the performance that he had tonight or yesterday or whatever the hell it was, he's going to be the favorite. He is now going to be the betting favorite to be the NFL MVP. And after a performance like that, it is totally justified. Mm-hmm. The plays that he made, the deep shots that he took. Remember a couple years ago when we were talking about how he couldn't throw an accurate deep ball? And look at some of the throws that he made today.
Diggs.
That's what I mean. Like
the Diggs one.
The Diggs one was just perfect. Mm-hmm. The throw to Emmanuel Sanders was stupid good. Like, even Sanders told us after the game, he was like, I kind of was in shock that it just hit my hands and I caught it and I kind of blacked out for a second.
And it stuck to his hands.
Yeah, he's like, it stuck to my hands and I just kind of like blacked out for a second.
You know the first thing that immediately came to my mind? Let me see if I still have his name up.
Yes.
Yes. What is his freaking name? I put it in the article too. Yes, it is Rashid Hot Hands Hannon. From Little Giants.
Little Giants. Can I give you a hot take?
Go on.
My hot take is that Little Giants is a better kids sports movie than The Sandlot. And a lot of people get upset about that. Because I've thrown that on social media before and people get mad.
All right, it's 4:28 in the morning. Beauvais not thinking straight.
No, I would tell you that.
I do love Little Giants for what it's
Little
worth.
Giants is great.
Becky the Icebox. But
what formation do you want to run out of? Power Eye.
The singular moment that kind of likened it to that Dallas game for me, and it's, yeah, I saw that. The moment that I really come back to from that Dallas game, there was a very similar sort of reaction to a play that he made. It was the hurdle play. The hurdle play when he leapt over the defender. It was 3rd and 4 to get 4 yards. Yep. Extended the drive. 6 plays later, they were in the end zone. They win the game, and they put away any of the lingering doubt that they would have won that game. But the way that he reacted to that play,
it's the exact same,
just absolutely was reminiscent of when he fumbled the snap against Dallas on a 4th down. He reached down, strong-armed to get the ball out of there, and then just battering-rammed his way through the rest of the Dallas defense to get like 5 yards past the line of scrimmage. And his reaction to both of those moments was like the coming-of-age moment, mm-hmm. where it was like, okay, this dude's feeling it right now. So I just really found it interesting. As soon as he did it, I immediately thought of that play.
Well,
and I'm like, Yeah, it's the same celebration.
It was the same celebration. He flipped the ball down, which maybe would have been a taunting penalty. I don't know. He threw his arm forward in the first down motion harder than anybody should probably ever throw their first, you know, their arm forward, because I would probably like separate his shoulder. But yeah, absolutely. It's one of those standout plays that, you know, it kind of tells the story of the entire game just into one play. And that's when, you know, I saw a clip from one of our friends, Dan Fates, over at 13 Wham in Rochester, and he had a really good angle of the Emmanuel Sanders touchdown at the end of the game, and like you could tell Josh was playing with confidence because like in the video clip he's chirping, he's like screaming at people like bye, see ya, and like that's how you know like at that point he was like he was feeling it.
Yeah, he was, and I think Emmanuel Sanders kind of like said as much after the game. Kept calling him special player. Yeah. It was a special game for him. Mm-hmm. And that Dallas game, the reason why I keep coming back to that Dallas game is because the feeling people had when they went into Dallas on a national stage, it was like the first time that they went from this, you know, this kind of good team that plays people tough to, all right, they might be onto something here. And Josh Allen was at the forefront of that. And to do what he did tonight against the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead, I mean, it's full marks. I mean, three touchdowns over 300 yards. At one point, he was averaging like 30 yards per completion. Yeah. Just insane stuff. Just dispersing the ball as well as he could. You know, taking advantage of all those little opportunities, always looking for the big play if it's there, but not forcing it when it's not, having his feet in the right way. There were a couple of instances where he had his feet kind of messed up and you know, the throw wasn't great, but those were so minuscule compared to what he did the rest of the day. And the rushing stuff, I mean, that was a huge component to his game that opened up the Chiefs defense right at the beginning of things. And because they had to, if they had to account for him doing that off, you know, actual design QB run plays, which the Bills have kind of gotten away from recently, then they're like, okay, well, they're a struggling defense as it is. So now they have 700 different things to think about with Josh Allen. And he just absolutely picked him apart.
Yeah, not for anything, Josh Allen in like primetime spotlight has been pretty, pretty good these last couple of years. Like, think about the two Monday Night Football games at the end of last year where it was against San Francisco and it was against New England. San Francisco, he was unbelievable. Against New England, they had the three touchdowns to Stefon Diggs. Obviously, you had tonight. There were those two weird games that were prime time last year that were the Monday at 5 o'clock Chiefs game. He didn't play great in that
talking
game.
About Tuesday night Titans,
and then Tuesday night Titans. Nobody on the team was very good in that game. But no, it seems like that he has stepped up on the stage, and it feels like he's comfortable in this stage, and this is going to be a place where they're kind of in a lot. Like, next week is Monday Night Football, and you know, they've got more primetime games later in the season. And you know, that's what happens when you're a good team, but the stage is never, it doesn't seem like has ever been too big for him recently. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have said the same thing a year ago, but now it feels like he kind of thrives in this setting. And, you know, remember like 3 weeks ago when people said Josh Allen couldn't play in front of fans? That was 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. People were like, yeah, but he can't do it in front of fans. Okay, well, he just did it in front of Arrowhead, in front of the loudest crowd, you know.
I have the new opt-out from that. It's like, well, Lightning took away half the fans.
Lightning took away half the fans. Exactly. It's like, still hasn't let, you know, won a game in front of a fully packed crowd for a full 60 minutes.
Yeah. No, I mean, Josh is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. There's no other way around it. The Bills have been waiting a long time for this player, and the Bills fans have been waiting a long time for this player.
When does the conversation, I don't know, because we're still learning, so like I've never covered an elite NFL quarterback like in the time that I've covered the team.
Do you think I have?
You haven't either.
Started off with Trent Edwards, buddy.
Yeah, I know. I mean, like, but when do we get to the point where like It's just there's going to be a couple bad games mixed in, but like he has now earned like that.
Look, I mean, yeah, there's going to be bad games. Like look what Mahomes just did.
That's what I mean.
He's now up to 6 interceptions on the year, and he's on pace by a long shot to have his career high in interceptions this year.
Like, what does Josh need to do to now kind of get that pass? Is he there? Like, if, like, you know, this is very, very hypothetical, but like, if they go lay an egg next week against the Titans and he doesn't have a good game, is anybody going to be like, well, what the heck's going on?
No, not yet. I think as long as he has, I think if they have another year, like win loss, like they did last year, and he sprinkles in these big games, then I think he automatically earns that treatment moving forward. But
for like the rest of his career, like Aaron Rodgers has bad games here and there.
I mean, I wouldn't go that far, just because we have seen the career arcs of some quarterbacks to where it's like a 2 to 3 year span, and then it's like, okay, what the heck happened to that guy?
Don't talk about Carson Wentz that way.
He might have been less than that, but yeah, there's a lot of examples that of players that have had short term success in the scope of, like, you know, the Bradys, the Rodgers, the Drew Brees, the Peyton Mannings of the world.
Yeah,
but yeah, I wouldn't get too over my skis just yet on that. Okay. But I do think he has absolutely earned every bit of respect that he's gotten, and to the point in which that he is without question a top 5 quarterback in the league.
Oh yeah.
And one that the entire team runs through. I mean, the offense was all Josh today.
Literally.
I mean, it was outside of what, 62 yards of rushing from Zach Moss and Devin Singletary.
Good mental math. At 4:37 a.m., you added 37 and 25. I would have pulled out my phone and added that on the calculator. Good mental math.
So he accounted for all but 62 yards yesterday. So yeah, I mean, when you are, it's like in basketball, like players that have high usage rates, right? Like they are usually the stars of your team, or they completely suck and your team sucks.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook, what up on the Wizards? But they actually made a run at the end of the year, but you know, neither here nor there. This is not an NBA podcast.
Not yet.
Not yet. I could talk NBA all day. Josh Allen is a high usage quarterback. And there are some times that he puts himself at risk.
Yeah.
Like running into a medical and equipment station.
A big medical metal box.
on the Chiefs sideline. He did subject himself to a couple of big hits in that game. But he has the frame to withstand a lot of these big hits. So it's just he is everything to this team, and that's why he is a top 5 valuation sort of quarterback, and that's why the Bills absolutely deserve every bit of respect they're going to get over the next week. As long as they, like, the Bills are a better team than the Cardinals. I mean, the Cardinals are undefeated, but the Bills are a better team than the Cardinals. I've been thinking this ever since, you know, the maybe second week of the season, watching them play as closely as I have since then. The Chargers are a damn good team.
Yeah, they're
like,
legit.
Like,
I mean, look
front
what they
to back.
Did to the Browns.
They've got a great offensive line. Justin Herbert is outstanding.
Yep.
The Browns secondary is kind of overrated, TBH. Uh-huh. But you know, Justin Herbert, Austin Eckler's playing at a great clip right now. They've got good play calling. They've got a head coach who understands and is smart. They are a dangerous team right now. And
well, it's kind of, I mean, for the sake of the Bills and for Bills fans, you know, that division is kind of stacked.
No. I disagree. The Broncos and Raiders are not good.
Well, I'm saying, like, you have the Chargers, you have the Chiefs, and the Broncos and Raiders are better than the Jets.
Oh, that's... The Jets beat the Titans, though.
Yeah, but we were just talking about weird things. I just think, Like those teams kind of all beat each other.
Yeah, the Jets are not good.
I mean, what a world though. Like, what if the Chargers win that division, and the Chiefs are potentially a wild card team? I mean, they're three games up on them right now.
The Chargers can absolutely win that division. They're two games up, buddy.
Well, yeah, but they have the tiebreaker too because they beat them.
So okay. Well, if the Chiefs beat them
again, it would be exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the AFC on the whole right now, there are not a lot of contenders. I mean, the Chiefs are still contenders, and even though the Bills just absolutely crushed them on Sunday, there's no reason for me to go away from that. Because I do think they'll figure things out by the end of the season. It's just one of those years for a good team with a good quarterback.
Yeah.
The Chargers, I think, are legit. Uh-huh. Outside of that, maybe the Ravens.
I was going to say, the Ravens are the really only other one, I think.
The Titans are probably going to win the South by default. The Colts are not good. The Jags are not good. The Texans are not good. The Browns, I think, are a little bit of a shell game because I don't think Baker's all that good. And I've never thought that. The Bengals might sneak into a wild card. I think they have some flaws, but they do have some good stuff to them. Steelers, not good, even though they beat the Broncos, but that's another indicator. Like the Broncos
just aren't very,
like they have a talented roster, but they don't have
a quarterback.
Exactly. They don't have a quarterback. The Raiders, same sort of deal. Like they have a fatal flaw, and now they've got like some bigger picture problems with their head coach. And then the AFC East is just a tire fire outside of the Bills. I mean, the Jets are horrible. The Dolphins are horrible. They'll probably be better when Tua gets back. And the Patriots are okay, they'll probably be better by the end of the season when the Bills are playing them. But you know, they might push for a wild card spot, but only because they're seven teams. But the point is, like, as long the Bills have to have injury luck, because that's a huge part of the equation.
100%.
The point is that the AFC this year is for the taking. Like last year, it was the Bills could make a run; they could get to the AFC title game. And if you get to the AFC title game, then you're a Super Bowl contender. But the Chiefs were always the overlords of the AFC. Now, there are no overlords. They have shown flaws.
Yeah.
The Chargers are unproven. The Bills are slightly more proven. The Ravens are unproven in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So when you have all of these different things, dare to think big if you're a Bills fan. Like, this can absolutely end in a Super Bowl appearance for them. And, you know, didn't know what it would look like, but five games in, it is now past small sample size status. It is now into trends, and this is who the team is. And who the team is one of the favorites to come out of the AFC.
It will be a disappointment if they do not have a bye week for Wild Card Weekend. And they are not the one seed.
I wouldn't go that far just yet.
I mean, they are in such a good spot.
It's week. I know it's week five.
And I know there's a lot of I know there's a lot of things that could happen, and you know, there are. And it's not like they need to be that to get to where they are trying to go.
They would need to get to a minimum of 14 wins.
Yeah.
To get that one seed.
Yeah, I think.
Which isn't crazy, but that would mean that they have to go.
They would have to get to 14.
I think so.
Like, I think, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but like, let's say the Chiefs beat the Chargers the next time they play.
Okay, so conservatively, 13.
13.
Yes. So they would need to go 11-3 the rest of the way, which is totally doable. Wait, no, 9-3. What am I talking about?
It's math, man.
It is 4:45, and we're just going to do a running line.
9-3. They're probably going to drop a game or two randomly. They'll be favored in 12 games left. They'll be favored
I could see
in 11 of them.
I could see them getting one seed with a 13-win team.
It just changes the dynamic so much because if you don't have to, like, weird things happen every single year.
Yeah.
Like, you could absolutely go into a wild card weekend game and lose. Like, the Bills almost did last year to the Colts as the two seed. Like, that stuff just happens. Every team that gets into the playoffs is good. Like, that's just how it works. You go in, you're playing a home game against a team that you should beat, and then you're in the AFC Championship, and it's at home.
Mm. Yeah. I mean,
like, look what the Patriots did, like, every year for, like, 20 years.
I know.
They got a bye, then they won.
They also had
and then all of a sudden they were in the AFC Championship.
They also had the advantage of there being two byes back then.
Yes.
So the Bills missed out on that window. Yeah, so I guess it's true. more emphasis to try and get that top seed in the AFC. But, yeah, I mean, I'm probably not as, like, I'm not quite there to where it would be, hey, it would be a disappointment if they don't get that one seed. But I would understand where people are coming from with that. It's just, to me, because it's week five, that's why, trying to be in the predictive business outside of 2 to 3 weeks in advance is usually not ideal.
Yeah, there's so many things. There's so many things that could happen.
Yeah.
There's so many different
ways. Way too many variables in football.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it is. It's weird. I mean, you just, like, look around the league. Like, we were just talking about how the Patriots are a fine team that might contend for a wild card spot later in the year, and they barely squeaked out a win against the Texans and Davis Mills, who the Bills just put up 40 on and shut out. So it's a weird league. Look at the Titans. I know they had injuries to A.J. Brown and to Julio Jones.
A.J. played today.
No, that's, I mean, but last week they lost to the Jets.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's crazy. Like, you know, they could go to Tennessee next week and lose.
Yeah, they absolutely could.
Like, Tennessee always plays them tough. Always. For, like, the last 3 years. Every year.
Yeah. I am very much looking forward to digging into that Titans-Jaguars film to see what the Titans have going on. But yeah, It's setting up well for the Bills, I think, is the point we can both agree on.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Because it is so early in the damn morning, I say we just get right to we should talk about the defense a little bit before we get into awards.
What if we just make all the awards defensive?
No, no, absolutely not. I thought the game plan by Leslie Frazier was great, and they were doing certain elements. I'm insane, and I track snaps during the game. We all know I'm insane. But the one thing that they were doing was to make up for Matt Milano. They used a two-pronged attack on early downs and short yard situations. AJ Klein was out there, and whenever it was a passing down or obvious, or like third down or an obvious passing situation, they would bring in Saran Neal. He did a really nice job, I thought. And it's a tough assignment, but where Saran Neal struggles, because he doesn't really have a home of a position. They call him a cornerback, but he's not really a cornerback. Because he struggles against players who are quicker, fast twitch, quick movements, quick feet, all of that stuff. And so that's tough when you're a cornerback on the roster. But if you have him in a solo matchup against a tight end like Travis Kelce, which they did a lot of the times, and it wasn't always man-to-man coverage. A lot of it was zone. But he would still have to check that guy at the line of scrimmage. He could stick with Kelce's movements and Kelce's physicality. Got called for a couple of penalties, but... the whole is greater than those two little moments. I really, really liked what Saran Neal did today. And it certainly helped bail them out of a tough spot without Matt Milano. But all of this would not have been possible without the pass rush stepping up the way that they did. Because that was, for me, I spent like 20 minutes on it on the preview podcast. That if this team wanted to, you know, be able to go toe-to-toe with the Chiefs and come away with a victory like the one, like this one, they needed their front four to be so much better than they have been the last 2 weeks. And they were. The defensive ends absolutely crushed it. Greg Rousseau was awesome. Boogie Basham was way better this week than he was last week against Houston. Jerry Hughes put together some good rushes. Mario Addison drew a penalty. AJ Epenesa, I believe, drew one penalty. And then on the interior, F.A. Obada, after being inactive for 3 weeks, I thought he had a strong game playing only at defensive tackle because the Bills only dressed three defensive tackles in this game. It was just a brilliant game plan on the back end and coverage. You know, they constantly had they were using Micah Hyde as a chess piece to go and thwart anything that that the Chiefs were trying to throw at them. Even when the pass rush didn't get there, I mean, the defense was just outstanding. And to only come away and give up 20 points, you know, seven of which was when the Chiefs were in total desperation mode at the end of the game. That is damn impressive. So full marks to Leslie Frazier and company. They were awesome.
And I was just looking this up. So according to NFL Next Gen Stats, one of the most impressive parts about that was they were getting to Mahomes and kind of, you know, forcing him into uncomfortable situations without blitzing. The Bills did not blitz once in the second half.
Yeah. No, it makes sense because, you know, our friend of the show, Nate Taylor, who covers the Chiefs for The Athletic, he's like, if I can give one bit of advice, do not blitz Patrick Mahomes because it will not end up well for you.
Yeah.
And, you know,
7%. That's all they did.
Well, yeah. I mean, it makes total sense because if you have one less person in coverage, then
he's going to find it. He's going to pick you apart.
Mahomes is going to find it, and he's going to burn the blitz because he can move.
Rousseau was so good today.
He was very good. It was not only just from a pass rush perspective, and the interception was kind of the flash play. I thought he was really good against the run today. There were just so many little moments for him. And even just redirecting a runner back inside, like all of this stuff that sometimes goes unnoticed, he was doing really well. And, you know, to a lesser degree, I mentioned him before, but Boogie Basham, I thought had a really nice game today. And I would not have seen that coming based on what I saw last week. Still have to see the film, whatever. We're not in awards yet, but Basham looked like he was pushing the pocket. It looked like he was varying his moves, and certainly not giving up on plays. And that's if they can get those two guys to play consistently, which is tough because it's a rookie year, and you don't really know what you have, and you're gonna get splash moments, everything like that. But if they can get those two guys to perform at a consistent level, then the defensive end room will be in pretty good hands, even if it's only Rousseau who's a long-term starter and Basham's more of a rotational guy, whatever. You get Basham for 20 to 25 snaps a game. You get Rousseau to be your starter. And then you figure out the rest of your defensive end rotation. So I really like both of those guys today.
Taron Johnson also had himself a weekend. He got paid a boatload of money. And then he performed like a standout star player yesterday against the Chiefs. I mean, I had to think about what day it is.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Like, he was matched up a lot with Tyreek Hill. He was matched up with Kelce a couple. Like, he was great. He's really good.
Yeah. And I will say, just I'm not taking away from Taron Johnson, but getting matched up when you're in zone isn't really like...
Yeah, it's just...
a crazy thing, yeah. But still, it's jamming at the line of scrimmage if you're up that close, or if he's in your zone, being able to react quickly. And he had to do quite a bit of that as well. So
yeah, he had one where he was just kind of standing there in the same place as like Hill, and he just kind of stuck his hand in front of him. And it didn't even look like he moved. It was almost like an accident that he was there. But it was like, okay.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it, because I didn't watch Taron Johnson all that closely. I was more so focused on the pass rush. But yeah, I mean, I was focused on the pass rush and watching what the linebackers were doing.
And I don't remember Tre'Davious White like getting targeted. I mean, I know there was the pass interference penalty with the Kelsey thing, but
missed a tackle too, I believe.
Did he miss a tackle? Yeah, but yeah. I was going to say, like, I don't remember like anything standing out with him, which is, you know, kind of common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the defense, they brought it, and yeah, it was the pass rush, which has to help the back end against an opponent like that one, because if the pass rush isn't going, then the back end is not going to do well. It's really that simple against Patrick Mahomes.
This is a weird one because, like, we're going to ultimately spend a little less time talking about the defense, and this is their most impressive performance so far this season, but the offense was also so good, and this was also probably their best performance so far this season. So it's weird because normally we would do, like, the big focus is one side of the ball, and then we would talk about the other side as kind of like a complementary piece. Well, today they were both so good that there's only so much you can say. There's really, like, what you really can't be critical about very many players on this team today.
I mean, I think this is one of those games where I think people want to think about the big picture more than anything.
100%.
Because of what it could mean.
Yes,
so
very much so.
So I hope you'll all give us a pass for only talking about the defense for a solid 8 minutes.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's get to awards because it's damn near 5 a.m. And I need to go to sleep.
I'm going to watch my morning show hit back in Buffalo. Oh my gosh.
All right. So, let's kick it off with the negative stuff. We're going to go with the Dree Archer Award for the player who did not show up today. Matt Bobay, who would you like to go with?
Cole Beasley, second week in a row. Didn't do anything.
And apparently deleted his Twitter account.
Yes,
so.
And deleted his Twitter account. One reception, 2 targets, 5 yards.
Draw your own conclusions.
Yeah.
I will go with Devin Singletary. Here's a stat for you. The last 3 games, Zach Moss has outsnapped Devin Singletary, but that's not the stat. In week 3, Zach Moss had 55%. In week 4, Zach Moss had 55%. In week 5 against Kansas City, Zach Moss took 73% of the snaps.
Yeah.
Which is...
Zach Moss is now RB1.
Well, he was tonight. He's been the better player. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to be that high of a disparity, but I will say in the last part of the game, he outsnapped Devin Singletary 25-7. So...
What was the word you used in the press box? Fumbalicious?
I called there was one point where the Bills were trying to close out the game that they trotted Devin Singletary out there when the rain was like at its worst, and Devin Singletary has a league high for running backs, 4 fumbles this year. He has the highest fumble rate through 4 weeks at 7.1%. He averages a fumble once every 14 touches. Like, you want to put that guy in that situation? And I'm like, yeah, really, that's one of the only things that I disagreed with from them from this game. It's like, yeah, you're really going to put your most fumble-icious running back in the
exactly
game at this moment with this sort of rain. And Elena Getzenberg, who covers the Bills for ESPN, she looked over. She's like, what did you just say? I'm like,
fumble-icious.
Get a hold of it. So yeah, I'm going with Devin Singletary there. All right, the Vontae Davis Award for the player that didn't show up in the second half.
I think I was gonna go with Singletary before you picked Singletary for your last one.
I'm gonna take it. I don't care. You can go Singletary.
I'm gonna go Singletary. Yeah, I'm just gonna
low
go
snap count
because low snap count didn't really do much. I'm gonna leave it out there because I don't want to say two people.
All right, you could have, because my Vontae Davis award goes to the Adam Thielen guy.
Oh, that was so. Yes, you were not gonna guess. You know, he stuck it out for
he did
30 minutes of
you
football.
You know what? If for those that don't know, that didn't follow along on Twitter,
how dare you?
Right at the beginning of the game, during the national anthem, I'd like to scan the crowd just to see what stupid jerseys I see. And I always find it interesting when a person wears a jersey from a different team to a game.
Yeah.
It's not like the worst thing in the world, but like it might just be personal preference. Like if I was in this, I'm not wearing jerseys anyway, but if I'm in that situation, like I'm probably just wearing a t-shirt or wear a coat or something like that. But I found this guy. I'm like, Hey, good news, everybody. There's a guy in an Adam Thielen jersey down in the crowd. And when the lightning break happened and there was a seek shelter notice on the Jumbotron for like a solid 30 to 45 minutes, Adam Thielen guy was down there just living it up. And he was sitting in his seats, completely ignoring the warning. It didn't, not until it started raining in buckets at one point, when the entire stadium cleared out, did he finally go in. And it's like, he's seeking shelter. He's finally following orders. And then when fans started to come back out there, Adam Thielen guy, nowhere to be found. And 15 minutes into the game actually happening, Adam Thielen guy was gone. So Adam Thielen guy gets the award gets the Vontae Davis award for the player in today's game that did not show up in the second half.
I hope the internet helps us find Adam Thielen guy.
Well, I took a picture.
That's what I mean. I mean, how many people were at the Chiefs game in an Adam Thielen?
I was kind of hoping he saw it and he tweeted at it, but there's no way. There's no way he did.
No, too bad.
I was really hoping for it. Oh, well. All right. Let's go to the land of the positive, the Matt Barkley Award for the player that caught you by surprise today.
I am going to go with Boogie Basham because, like you said, expectations weren't really there. He got a pretty significant amount of snaps considering what he was, you know, he was inactive a couple weeks ago, made some splash plays. Really, you know, really strong. What is this? His second start or not start? Second game.
Yeah,
it's only his second game. So, like 3 weeks ago, we were talking about how he wasn't sniffing the lineup, and now he's making plays. Mm-hmm. So good for you.
Yeah,
Boogie.
he boogied on. I'm going with F.A. Obada, okay. Because he was the Bills went with the strategy of only dressing three. Defined defensive tackles. They made both Harrison Phillips and Vernon Butler inactive. They wanted to highlight getting pressure with their front four, and they thought that F.A. Obada gave them the best chance to do that, and I thought he did a really nice job with it. So, and he played the run on some snaps as well as the defensive tackle. So F.A. Obada gets that award, and, you know, pretty telling that the two guys that got the, you know, Matt Barkley pleasantly surprise award are two of their three big pass rushing additions. Yep. to their repertoire.
Yeah.
Against Patrick Mahomes. So there's that. All right, let's go with the Gotta Watch the Tape Award. Matt Bovee, who you got?
I will go with AJ Klein because it seems like he was kind of all over the field, and that's a good thing, but I just kind of want to see how he did when he was called upon because he made a lot of tackles and whatnot, but, you know, I don't remember right now at first glance. It might just be because it's like 5 a.m. I don't remember like any super specific huge plays from AJ Klein, but that also doesn't mean that he, you know, had a bad day. I think he had a pretty good day.
Yeah.
But I want to check more into that.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a little bit of a different angle on it. I got to watch the tape on Micah Hyde to see how damn impressive he was. Yeah. And if it was as impressive or even more impressive than I was first thinking, because mm-hmm. that dude was everywhere. Michelle Branch status. He was awesome. And I think it is so worth, he is so worthy of the national acclaim he is finally getting this year, because for years he has been one of the best safeties in the league. For my money, I think he's a better player than Jordan Poyer. And I know they kind of go hand in hand, but what he prevents opposing teams from doing to the Bills on a weekly basis goes so unnoticed every single week. And for him to finally get like the stats to go with it, like he's going to be a Pro Bowl player this year, and he deserves it. And I think he is in the conversation for one of the best five safeties in the league.
Yeah.
And ran. All right. Blaine Gabbert. Oh, no, the Blaine Gabbert Matthew Fairburn Award for perseverance. Who you got?
I'm going to go with Josh Allen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
I think, you know, what's the best cookie?
Oh, again with the cookies.
What's the best
cookie? I'm going to become a heel because I'm not a big cookie guy. So
yeah, I am.
So now because I'm not a big cookie guy, I'm going to roll my eyes every time the cookie segment comes
Josh
up.
Josh Allen today,
fine, I'll do it,
was not just a chocolate chip cookie, which would have been fine. If Josh Allen was a chocolate chip cookie in this game, they still would have had a chance to win. Josh Allen today was one of those Toll House ice cream sandwiches with two chocolate chip cookies that has the ice cream in the middle, and they're like $18 at Disney World or like $6 at your local ice cream truck.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You've never seen the ice cream sandwich cookie that is like cookies? You know how like an ice cream sandwich has like the stupid like chocolate crust thing?
I know, I can see what you're talking
These
about.
These are legit two chocolate chip cookies surrounding a pellet of ice cream.
That sounds way too rich for me.
No.
Like chocolate rich.
Well, no, I think it's really good. But that's what Josh Allen was today.
Okay.
He was elite.
You're saying he was an ice cream sandwich. That's what you're saying.
A cookie ice cream sandwich.
Okay.
You don't know, he was a cookie cake.
5:06 in the morning.
He was a cookie cake.
5:06.
He was a cookie cake with a nice message on it.
In the morning. What is happening?
See? So bad.
See? I know. See? This is what happens for these night games, and we got another one next week.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
That stupid rain delay.
Uh-huh. Yep, it happened. All right, so my Blaine Gabbert Matthew Fairburn Award for perseverance will go to Gabriel Davis. He didn't get many snaps, and on his only target of the game, he pulled in a clutch first down. Mm-hmm. So I'll go with Gabriel Davis. I'm not gonna sit here and call him a cookie, but I think he did well with the opportunity that was presented.
He's like a sugar cookie. He was fine.
I just want this to be over. All right, so the Bills win this one 38-20. They're now 4-1 on the season, and they're in a pretty promising position right now in the confines of the AFC, and maybe we'll see how they compare with some of the other top tier teams as the season kind of rolls along. All right, Matt Beauvais, any fond words of farewell for our listeners at 5:07 in the morning?
Good night, goodbye, and good luck. Or good morning, if you're actually no, at this point, good morning. Goodbye and good luck.
Okay, well, good luck indeed. All right, so if you haven't yet, be sure to head over to theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat and subscribe right now for 50% off your yearly subscription. You can get access to all of the stuff that both me and Tim Graham write about the Bills, John Vogel on the Sabres, anything NBA since that season's coming up pretty quick here, anything Premier League since that season's still going. So, yeah, basically any league you could want we cover. So theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat for 50% off. Okay, so for Matt Beauvais, my name is Joe Piscaglia. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this edition of The Buffalo Beat, and we will talk to you for the preview game leading up to the Titans game next week. See you then.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.